The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Are you ready, Steve?
Uh-huh.
Andy?
Yeah!
Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Well, let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Thursday, 8th day of March, 2012. The Dow is up 54 points, S&P is up 10, the comp is up 27, gold is up $11. Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon, Dwayne.
So the chart we have on the screen is the S&P 500 E-Mini Futures. It is an hourly chart. In other words, I know, each candle represents 1 hour in time. When you set up your charts, you can do a lot of different things. You can measure time, you can measure volume, you can measure ticks. Is there anything else you can measure? Volume, time, ticks.
Volume, time, ticks.
That's enough, right?
That's plenty.
Okay.
That's plenty.
This is an hourly chart. Each candle represents 1 hour in time. In hindsight, it doesn't look like a lot, but, you know, quite frankly, it's now 3.5 days of trading, all in one easy-to-view screenshot. Actually, this is not a screenshot. This is a live chart. Monday, we had a pretty quiet zone-to-zone day. Price touched down at 1358, rallied up to the weekly trading zone at 1364, put in a high, and that high was 1365.75. Let me just go ahead and, if you'll follow the purple line, look where the high was today so far. Exactly 1365. 75. So when I write on the blog, that would be this, about the importance of support and resistance when trading E-mini futures, you can't underestimate it and you can't overstate it. It's a force to be reckoned with. And let it be your friend. Let it be your business ally. Let it be your partner in the markets. Work with it. Don't fight it. Don't trade against it. Now, you can trade against support and resistance as known areas, just like, you know, this was a known resistance area. So selling against that, that's not trading against it. That's trading with it. See, that's letting it be your friend and be your business partner. So we come off Monday here at the weekly zone, and we go into Super Tuesday, which was a big day for the political world, not such a big day in the markets. And I wonder if the two somehow in some universe, some parallel world, this tells us something. Super Tuesday, biggest day in the whole primary deal, and it was the largest one-day point drop in both the Dow and the S&P for 2012. Now followed by the best two-day rally. Last night, when we posted the blog, we had already recouped, I believe it was 62% of the Super Tuesday sell-off. We were sitting right about here, I think, when I posted that. I'll bring up a chart in a moment and show it. We've now gone on to recapture the whole thing. See, largest one-day point drop for 2012, and then over the course of 2 days, right back there to break even. Okay? Now, we had talked yesterday on the radio program, towards the end of the show, that because we had, well, first we talked Tuesday night that we would expect 47.48 to be resistance on the first trip up. It was. We then continued to move higher. We consolidated for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 hours right at the zone, 47.48. And then once we put in the second hour yesterday, which was really the only big hour of the day, all the other hours were very small range bodies, it was more of a melt up than a rally. I mean, you had this slow gradual move, a slight retracement, and then a continued move higher. And we said that we expect, once this closed up in this area, as we closed out the radio show yesterday, we said we were looking for price to move 257.58. It did take into the wee hours of this morning for it to get there, but in fact it got there. And once it got there, then one of two things happens. Price just consolidates inside of the zone like it did here, or it gets rejected for a trip back here, or it moves higher for a trip up to the next rung on the ladder, or the next zone, which is at 64.65. And that is a big picture look at what's going on so far this week. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. It's as if all of this really didn't even happen, because look where we are. Same spot. You'll notice price consolidated 2.5 hours roughly here at the 64.65. Over the next 3 hours, came back to 57.58. 2 hours to get back to 64.65. Do we have weekly trading zones above that? Yes, we do. Are they somewhat contracted? Yes, they are. Is there room between them to get a trade on? Why, yes. Yes, there is. Quick look at the YM. Okay. Just sort of the exact same thing. Price got back above the zone, traded to here. Only difference being that we have an area right here at 12.960 that has not been reached yet. We additionally had an area in here at 12.915 that did get reached on that first push-up. Now, again, these zones are a bit contracted, and that's because of the low volatility. If you found yourself getting chopped up yesterday in trading, in all of this sideways action, okay, through the... See, this is the majority of yesterday's trading session, right there. Put a little box around it. That's the big day on Wall Street. Okay? Let's go over here to the 10,000 contract. And yesterday was the 7th. Okay, this is literally untradeable. I mean, you can trade it. There's a number of different things you can do with it. But a very simple thing to take a look at is the average true range, which I don't bring up a lot. But when you've got on a 10,000 contract, when you've got average true range that's trading down, you know, below a half a point. In fact, in other words, when 10,000 contracts trade, then you only see price move a half a point. That's not conducive to good trading, okay? To getting a nice swing. And that's what you need, is you need the market to move. Whether in the E-mini futures, whether it's moving up, whether it's moving down, what you need is movement. Now, here we have some movement. On this candle, we've got a low at 59, and we got a high at 60. See, we at least have one full point in this candle. And in the previous candle, 59.50 to 60 and a quarter. Still not a lot, okay? But certainly better than a lot of what we're seeing yesterday in that sideways choppy motion. So we've managed to wind our way back up to the zone, 64.65. It was resistance earlier this morning on the way up. It spiked as high as, looks like, 65.75. Made the trip all the way back down to the zone right here. 30 minutes into the Wall Street open, put in a nice little double bottom right here. You see that? We get our bullish cross, we get our pullback, and we're off to the races right up to the zone. In a perfect world, that's how it should always look. As we all know, we don't live in a perfect world. But we try to make the best of it, right?
Right.
Last night on the blog, real quick, I talked about... that's where we were when I posted the blog last night. We were just below that 57.58. The futures had already made the trip to 865. This move here was a 62% retracement of the sell-off from Tuesday. This was a little just better than 50% of the retracement from Tuesday sell-off. And then I posted this chart as well. Okay, here's what was happening on the euro. This is the big picture daily chart. White candles, potential change of trend. Red bearish, blue bullish. We see that. White candles, we see this. Here we get white candles, but the bulls win. We get another leg up. We come back, white candles, questioning it, testing it. We pull this little trend line on the daily. We actually trade below it. And then I said last night on the blog that if we get a move back up to, I think, 1322, that would be considered a viable place to start considering a longer-term short position in the Euro 6E. But there is a huge piece of fundamental that you need to layer in there. There's a 7 p.m. deadline tonight on this whole debt swap default Greece no longer being a member of the Eurozone thing, where their creditors have to agree to accept, I think it's down to now like 25 cents on the dollar for this whole thing to work. And I don't even know what the whole thing is anymore, but for it to work, they've got to agree to that, and there is a 7 p.m. deadline. So if they get kicked out of the Eurozone, does everybody breathe a sigh of relief? And it's like, man, we're sure glad they moved out of the neighborhood. Now we can get on with life. And so the Euro rallies based on that? Or does the Euro crumble on that? Or if they meet the deadline and then the rest of the Eurozone, do they go, yay, okay, it's all good? Or, we tried to evict the bad neighbor and we weren't able to do it. We're stuck with them. They probably still won't mow their lawn or pick up their trash. You see what I'm saying? How do you know which way the markets are going to react, no matter what the outcome of the 7 p.m. deadline is? I don't know. And for all I know, it's already 7 p.m. What time is it now in the Eurozone, Michael?
In the Eurozone, it's 6, I believe, right now. So, actually, Greece is, it may be 1, it may actually be 7 over there right now.
Now, in this chart that I posted,
sir,
we are using the trend change indicator, okay, on this daily chart. If you have an interest in knowing more about that, it is part of our suite of indicator tools, and you can watch the video on the blog. If you don't know how to get to the blog, just go to cfrn.net. On the right-hand side of the page, any page, click Visit Our Blog. It'll bring you here. We post each and every day. You can hook up with us on the Twitter, the Facebook. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. You can, in fact, take a five-day free trial in our live trading room where you will have access not only to live trades with real money, but you'll also have a platform, live data, lots of indicators, and training. So with that, I've overstayed my welcome already. Michael, take it away.
All right, I will take it away. And by the way, it is 7 p.m. It's actually 7:20 in Athens right now.
Okay. I'm not seeing anything across the headlines about how the meeting came out, but I'm sure we will hear shortly if that's the case, unless they change the deadline.
Hang on. Just give me one second, Pacific.
Thanks, Ashton.
Okay, I had to fix that. let me grab the charts and all that business. Okay. Here we go.
Oh, for those of you that have requested a Google Chrome toolbar, the one that I put out there works with Microsoft. What's that thing called? Oh, Explorer, right? Or Internet Explorer, okay.
Internet Explorer, yes.
Yeah. And, of course, the real browser, Firefox, it definitely works with that. Chrome's a great browser as well, and I'm just poking fun at Internet Explorer. But I'm having some difficulty putting together the Chrome version. I'm working on it, and as soon as I have it ready, Ron, I know I told you I'd get on it first thing this morning, and I did. I just didn't succeed, so I'm still at it. So hang tight. As soon as I have it, I'll send it to you.
All right. Let me get everything that I need to show ready here. All right. Let me get my recorder ready, and we'll get started. View recording. Here we go. All right, good afternoon, everyone. Today is March 8th, 2012. It's Thursday, March 8th, 2012. I want to encourage everyone who has not taken a trial at CFRN.net to go to www.cfrn.net/apply, that's APPLY, and sign up for the free trial if you haven't taken one. If you have taken one, and you have any questions about maybe taking a second one or becoming a partner, or becoming part of the mentorship partner program that we have, send an email to support@cfrn.net, and we'll get back to you with any details you ask. All right. That said, we have a partners meeting tonight for everyone who was out there who was a partner. Partners meeting tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. We have some things that we're going to be going over with regard to the Russell, the YM, and the 6E tonight, in particular those markets, and anything else anybody has that they bring to the table tonight, we'll be happy to discuss. The morning session, I'll go over all the stuff that we did in the morning session here. All right, let's start right over here. This is the Russell. All right, I didn't take any trades on the ES. They just didn't set up again this morning. You know, even this last move up here, we never got to pull back down to the BBC. So they just didn't set up this morning on the ES for me. There was one opportunity that Dwayne had pointed out on the 10K, right here on the 10,000 contract chart. When we had a bullish cross here, it pulled back down, and it was going right into the resistance dots there. So I didn't take that trade, though it did move up nicely. Okay. Let's start out with the results. I didn't take any trades in the live trading room this morning, but Dwayne did. And you can see this is his YM DOM right here. The YM H2, depth of market. He's got 14 points he made on the YM this morning. All right. The trade that I took was a Russell trade, and I got a break even on it. Now, I was pointing out a bunch of different things, and I'm going to go through them one at a time. All right. I just started to go through the ES. I wanted to get the results in the recording right away so we can anybody that's just looking for the results can see them quickly when they view the recording later, the recap later. I believe Dwayne took this long trade right here after the bullish cross. It came back down, hit the BBC, and moved up. All right, I marked it, but I didn't take it. That was pretty near it on the YM. We had the initial short trade was right in here when it was in this chop, and I wasn't trading this morning. The first half an hour about was really choppy, and we didn't take any trades in that first half an hour. The market pulled down here just a little bit, pulled away, met the rules, the requirement right there, so the actual entry would have been right there on that pullback. It pulled back again down here going into the weekly trading zone. I did not take that one. I saw it happening, but I didn't take it because it was going into the zone. It turned around off the zone. We had a bullish cross and a pullback down to the BBC for the move up right there. Okay. Now, I like to take just the first pullback myself. Some folks like to do more than one pullback, and that's fine if you like to do that. There's a number of different ways that you can trade these things. We just give you a starting path, and if you like that starting path, you can stick to it. If you find something else that suits you better, of course, you can go and do that as well. All right. So that's pretty much the ES and the YM on the morning. And now I'm going to jump over here to the Russell. What we were looking at this morning, these are some trades that happened this morning. I didn't actually take these trades. The first one was right here with divergence. You see we had all this divergence down here, the close down below the MA1 right here. That was a nice move down. I tried to take that trade, but I didn't get filled. I got my order on too late. We had a partner that got into that trade early. And actually, it was this trade over here. It was 96. It was this one over here that he got into. I tried to get into this short right here, and I didn't get filled. He got into it right here and took 6 ticks on it when it pulled back over here. Anyway, what we're looking for here was the divergence and the roll down right down here on the bottom. Divergence and the roll down. Get in on the close of the bar after the roll down. We had a hiccup in here. This is one of the little hiccup trades. On that, you just look for the down close over here. We had the same divergence type setup. The entry would have been right in there. Okay. Price moved around quite a bit. Here was a long trade. This was the buying pressure or hiccup, we call it. And I took this long right here. It went up a little bit in our favor. Then it came back down. And I moved my stop to break even right here. Okay, once we started closing below the MA1, price moved against us a little bit. It would have come within a tick of stopping me out right here had I stayed in the trade. Then it took off. And right here, you can see we had the same kind of divergence on the Russell. And I didn't take this because it was going into a zone, but I know I did. You know, we do have some partners in the room that took this trade this morning. We pointed it out, but I don't trade into the zones no matter what. All right. In the break period, we had all this sideways action in here where nothing was going on. And we right now have opposing divergences on these two things right here. Okay. So it's probably a good time to not do anything at, you know, at the moment. All right. It's possible that if we get a nice move up here and it closes above the MA1, that could be a good possible good long trade right there. Okay. So that was that. Now the 6E, I'll go over the 6E a little bit. Let's see what time is it, 12:28. All right, in the live trading room this morning when the market was over here, I had drawn in these trend lines. Once this is the 5-tick range on the 6E, once we broke out of those trend lines, you can see we moved up pretty strong right there, pretty quick. And you know, you can draw another trend line right now, another set of trend lines, I should say, right here. Now, what this, oops, that wasn't a great line. What this is suggesting is that we are, if we drop down below here, it's probably going to keep going down. Now, it was odd today. When everything was happening this morning, when we got the majority of the movement this morning on all the markets, the 6E is what led. And it started off with the 6E being the thing that was the most congested. If you look at from right here at the open, it was up and down and up and down and up and down. And the BBC was in the box the whole morning. And for the partners, knowing what the BBC is in the boxes, I'm going to get into more detail about that tonight. All right, but then the 6E was the first one to get out of it and the first one to move. And move it did. It made a very nice move with the white to the left of the green. We had a nice move up right there. White to the left of the green, a nice move down. The green was to the left of the white here, so it wasn't a great move. Same thing here. It wasn't looking so great. Same thing here on the upside. Finally, over here, the white was to the left of the green again, but it still didn't go very far. And right now it's gotten back into really choppy period, okay? But one thing worth noting was when it broke out of this triangle that I had drawn in here this morning, this little pennant thing, when it broke out of that, it really went. And that was right over here. So at that time, we had suggested at that time that 32.36 right in here, with the break of the elbow right here, given the position of the white to the left of the green, a bounce off the BBC here was likely, and it made a nice bounce as it broke through that level right there. Now, we've had some people that have been requesting information about the FTSE 100. Now, here it is. This is the FTSE. This was the first trade that I had mentioned this morning. At the time, it was 58.42 half, I believe, is what I had suggested. 58.42 half for an entry. Maybe it was 58.41 half. No, 58.42 half. I think that was the first one that I recommended this morning. But I went over these trades. I hadn't recommended these trades because they happened before I even looked at the FTSE. But I did recommend this one when it was happening. All right, and price moved up pretty strongly off of that. Then it gave... Oh, this was the first one. Sorry. This was the first one. 58.52 half. Or 58.53 half. Anyway, right in here. I remember the half being part of it. It was either 52 half or 53 half. But right in here, and price moved up off it. Then it came back down and bounced off the BBC again, right there. And since then, it's turned around and given a couple of opportunities on the downside, bouncing off the BBC. You know, that was right into our break period right here. This was the last one. Now, with the FTSE, the margin on the FTSE is quite a bit. Not too excessive. I think it's like $1,500 or something like that. But the per tick value, I believe it's a little over $7 per tick, is what the FTSE pays, just for everybody that's interested in it. For those of you folks who like to trade pre-market, this may be a market that you would consider, and I will show you why. Let me throw the volume on there. This is a 5-minute chart, and you can see it comes to life here at 3 o'clock Eastern time. All right. It has spikes in volume. The volume is pretty low in here, but it does have spikes in volume around 4 a.m., then 5, And then again, when our markets open up over here at 9:30, you know, the volume starts to increase. All right, and it stays. The volume spikes and then it stays up till about right now. And it just drops right off. And you can go back and look at that over and over on the various charts. Okay. All the prior days. Now, let me flip this back. This is a 233 contract, okay, not to be confused with a 233 tick. Let me remove that. All right. Now, there is one other thing I want to remind everyone about, and I will show you how to do it in here. Today is the first day the new contract becomes available for everyone that's trading the March contract. The June contract becomes available now. So using DT Pro to move forward, you can go to View, Roll Forward. That's going to roll it. You see the ESM2? It's going to roll the contract forward. That's one way to do it. Another way to do it is to just click on the chart anywhere and type in ESM2. All right, like that. All right. Now that's only one piece of the equation, right? Because if you're going to be rolling your chart forward, then you want to make sure your DOM is also getting rolled forward. All right. So if I click that, it's not going to let me bring up my DOM. But if I bring up my DOM over here, okay, here is my DOM. You see it says ESH2 on it. You have to close your DOM. Just close it. All right. Roll your chart forward. So your chart is ESM2. Then bring your DOM back up. And your DOM will be ESM2. Okay? You guys see that? Just do that, and you'll be trading the correct symbol on the correct chart when you roll it forward. All right? We're probably going to roll it forward tomorrow. Depends on what the volume looks like. But for right now, we're going to stick with the H. Okay? And you see I just did it again. My ESH2 matches my ESH2 chart. All right? Lastly, partners meeting tonight, for anybody that's a partner. If you have any questions or anything like that, anything you want me to discuss prior to the meeting, you know, email them to me prior to the meeting if you want, and we'll discuss them. I'll put it on my list. For anybody that's not a partner, anybody that is in here on their trial, who is interested in going to the meetings are usually very good. Sometimes they're pretty long. The last bunch of them actually have been pretty long. You know, 2.5-3 hours for the last couple months, it seems like. But they're packed with information, lots and lots of information. All right. So if you're on the fence, become a partner by tonight, and you can be in the meeting tonight. If you have any questions about how to become a partner and you need more information, send me an email at support@cfrn.net. That's support@cfrn.net, and I will get back to you as quickly as possible. You can also call me. My phone number, my phone number is in the email that I sent to everyone. All right, so you all have my phone number. You can call me directly. All right. That said, I am going to stop the recording here, and we can move on with the show. There we go. Sorry, I overran it a little bit because I wanted to show that I wanted to show the rolling forward thing. But we're all good.
That's good. And everyone, as I mentioned yesterday on the end of the show, if you use a charting platform that has where you utilize a continuous chart, in other words, you don't have to change the symbol, then you are automatically rolled into the new contract as of today. Today is what they call official rollover day. So even though volume has not exceeded, what do you show for volume, Michael? You got volume figures up there?
Yeah, let me get it for you. It's right over here. I have the total volume for the H is 1.1 million, and the total volume for the M is 441,000. So we're still
So we've got about half as much volume, or less than half as much volume on the new contract.
Yeah, that includes the Globex, but yes, that is true.
So by tomorrow, they should be on par, and then I would guess by Monday, Tuesday on the outside, then the new contract volume will exceed, and then the old contract will expire on, is it the 16th?
Next week, Friday, I think it expires. Yep, the 16th.
Okay. All righty. Well, anything else we need to add here? For those of you listening or joining us for the first time, thank you. We hope you enjoy your stay, enjoy your visit. If there's anything we can do to clarify something, answer questions, maybe you're new to trading, new to e-mini futures, or just new to the radio program, don't be shy. You have access to the chat box. Just type in a question. We'll be glad to address it. If you are listening to the radio stream and wonder, what are the charts these guys are talking about? What's really going on here? Then you have clicked the radio stream, which is available 24/7, but 2 hours a day from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. Eastern. We do live market commentary. That's what we're doing now. And we additionally display our charts. So you just need to click the button on the homepage of the website, on the right-hand side, under the radio tower, not the one that says radio stream, but the one that says participate in the discussion. Click here, big red, white, and blue button. Click that. It will put you through a quick registration process, and then you're good for the entire week. So I always encourage folks, come Monday morning, go ahead, do the deal. You only have to register once each week. And then you'll get a reminder email each morning, hey, here's your link for the radio program. So you only have to sign up once each week. So if you sign up today, then you'll have to do it again Monday. So just do it every Monday, and then you're good for the entire week. If you have any questions on any of that, or if you're having difficulty with the broadcast or accessing the radio program, send an email to support@cfrn.net, and we'll do our best to sort it out and walk you through it. If you're on an Apple computer, your best bet, okay, if you don't have the Windows Media Player plugin, your best bet is to do this. Go download the TuneIn radio app. That is what it's called, right? I use it every day.
Yes, I use it every day.
I just don't read the name of it. I just push it and go.
Yep.
Yeah, TuneIn, TuneIn radio. Just a great app. It's free. You can get the pro version for like $1 or $1.99 that allows you to record programs. But I know that a number of our listeners who are out and about, around town, at work, on the job, that kind of thing, they listen to the radio program stream live via their iOS device, their Mac AirBook, etc., by using the TuneIn radio app, iPhone, iPad, even Android. TuneIn radio app. Just go to your app store and search for it. We will now go to Mr. David Williams at pagetrader.com, but first we'll pause for a short station identification.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310, and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Dwayne.
Hey, David, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, and good morning, Michael.
Good morning, David.
How are you guys today?
Very good. Very good. The market has staged, well, it's been an interesting 3 days. We had the largest one-day drop in 2012, and now we've had the best two-day rally. So,
well,
we're right back where we started on Monday.
Yeah, and it's nice to see volatility back on the market. This is helpful. This is also the kind of thing that you would see as you start approaching more important topping action. You see the volatility pick up, and you see this type of behavior, the big swings up and back, and then this would finalize in a very important top and a multi-month, in this case, decline. So, yeah, this has been really good to see this kind of volatility, straight line, directional moves both up and down. And should be interesting to see how the week closes. For this week, if we close the week above 1369, that will be certainly a stronger position. We're trading right now at 1360. Oh, you know what? Let's go over to, I'm sorry, let's, we're over in the June contract now. So I'm going to quote, or do you want me to quote March, because we're in June, and I, you know, officially today is the rollover day.
It is. You know, if most of our people are still in March, can you quote March, or do you, or I can bring up a chart that displays the June as well. So just whatever.
No, March is fine. I'm happy with March. It doesn't matter to me. For the week, what we're talking about then is we're talking about in March, closing the week, because we're trading right now in March at 1364. There's an important level at 1364 in March, and then there's an important level at 1369. And it's 1369 that is the more important number for us to read into the strength or weakness of the market. So a weekly close, meaning tomorrow, Friday, close below 1369 would be, short-term anyway, the weaker position. And a close above 1369, and that would be expected normally, but a close above 1369 would be the stronger position. And it doesn't, it is possible, you can't rule out that the market would make a new high with any weekly close above 1369 into next week. That's not an outright forecast, but if the market does close above 69, that leaves it in a position where that would be much more likely to happen. And if that did happen, that would lead us into a very important top that we would want to trade short against into next week. So we'll talk about that if we get to that point and the market completes breaking out to a new high, which in March, of course, next week we'll all be in June, right? You guys will be in June next week on Monday.
Yeah.
Yes.
As soon as the volume exceeds on the new contract, we'll switch, which probably will be Monday. Could be as late as Tuesday. And
okay.
If they get busy tonight, I mean, you know, it could come as early as tomorrow, but more than likely Monday.
Okay. if we do get the move above 1377.25, which was the high in the March contract, then that's going to put us very close to a important daily top, and all kinds of important things would be indicated at that point. We'll talk about that when it happens, when and if it happens. In the meantime, you know, we had the initial forecast for the top to occur in the first half of March. And, you know, the market really in March, in the March contract, made its high on February 29th, which was one day early off of the March, you know, trading in March. So even though our forecast was for, you know, a March top, if you really look closely, you see the high was made at 1377.25. So far, we made a high of 1377. So,
you know, in March. So can we make this, can we say, we not meaning us, but just anybody, can we say that that simply is a double top with last month, that March has made a double top? But I wouldn't be surprised to see March make new highs at all. And that would, and even powerful new highs, that would be possible. So we want to leave the door open for that. Anybody who's long off of the forecast bottom on the daily chart, the March 6th forecast bottom that we talked about on the program, anybody who's long would want to exit some of their position if they haven't already. This is obviously, we're just stepping in here at this point and saying this, but the 64 level is the first of importance, and then the 68 to 69 level would be another place to exit positions, and you would hold anything remaining as an aggressive position for the possibility of the breakout to new recent highs. So that's that's how we see it here, basis the March contract. So we're really, you know, we're getting close to the edge here on the top side, as we talked about. I would personally, I'd like to see a slight new high made in March. It would be, you know, technically, again, you know, we're one tick off. We made a high in March of 1377, and we made a high in February of 1377.25. So effectively, March is double topped with February, which is fine. But I would like to see at least an attempt at new highs based off of this bottom. So we bottomed at 1338.50, again, basis March. We're up at 1365. So we've had a nice little bounce off of that bottom. And this is, for those of you who are coming to the March 24th and 25th Reflected Wave Seminar, you'll see this exact setup on your, when you're there, and you'll learn exactly why anybody with this technique could have made that same call. The magic is in the method. It's not in the guru. In many cases, the magic is in the guru, not so much so in the method. And one of the things I like about any method is if it's objective. That means it doesn't require somebody to have a special eye or a special way of looking at something or years of experience, for that matter, looking at something. Anything takes practice, no matter what it is, even something objective. But if what you're practicing is very subjective, then you're either the guy that can do it or you're not. It's just that simple. And you can hang around the guy that can do it. As an example, the Elliott Wave thing, because Elliott Wave is a very popular form of watching markets, but it's possibly the most subjective thing ever devised for the markets, because you can have one, two, or three people. Even one person in a room is having an argument about himself, about which count it is, let alone two or three. And so objectivity, the ability to have a number of people look at the same thing and get the same indication, is extremely important. And then with that, you can go on to do, you know, to put together a system that very well might be subjective to you, but it's based on objective signals. So that's one of the things, that's one of the benefits of Reflected Wave, is that it is objective, and the magic is in the method. It's not in the guru or somebody who has developed an eye for looking at it a certain way. It really is just something that you can practice, and it's very easy to see, and it's fully automated for that matter. So anyway, so we're up today, and, you know, so like we've seen this so many times. Look, you know, we've had a nice little move up today, there's no doubt. But we've also are seeing what we've seen very often, which is that either the volume, I don't have the volume up in front of me, but appears to be quite light today. And we're having the same kind of behavior that we've seen so often, which is that we get very, very quiet ranges midday, in sometimes the whole day for the most part, where the trading is really, really quiet. And I prefer to trade in a little bit more active market, and I'm sure most people do. We're basically in a trend day up from yesterday, you know, just moving on off of yesterday's bottoms. On the program yesterday, I also want to mention, we had talked when Mike Reed was on that there was a possibility of a, although I don't have it right up in front of me, just give me a minute here and let me see if I can find this. There was just an idea presented that the market could in whatever hour it was. Let me find it here. I know I have it. that in the 5th hour yesterday, we were looking for the market to make a new high and to test 1347/48 in that time frame. This is basis, sorry, the June contract. And because we rolled one day early yesterday, they just, you know, it was just an accident, actually. And then the possibility of a decline. But the market did, subsequent to the program, it was very easy to see that the market had inverted at that point, which meant that the market would want to go up in today up to 56 basis, sorry, the June contract. This is the only chart that I have this set up on. And so we're right now at 59, but we spent much of the morning, the highest hourly close, first close was at 52 and the high was 57, so we tested the 56. Then we went to 56.50 on the hourly close, and now we're above that. So if anybody is looking at June, 63 is the next level of importance on the upside. And so if that gets tested, that would be an area that we would be interested potentially for the first time in the day to be taking a short position. We'll wait and see if they show us something there. There's also potentially long positions here if the market had a little bit more volatility, which we attempted to do earlier today, but it's been really, really quiet. We had forecast that 51 would be buying territory for today. They got down to 51.75. We attempted to buy it, but we missed our entries. So the market just wasn't able to come down. We made a couple of attempts at that, and we just weren't able to get in. Under more normal volatility, it would have been easier to, you know, we even tried to buy 52 for a while, and we just couldn't get filled. So just the quiet volatility makes it a little bit more difficult to get in. Sometimes you just have to buy what, Dwayne? The silly thing.
Sometimes you do.
Sometimes you do. and that's just the way to do it. For people who trade slightly longer term, rather than just like what we're talking about now, just these intraday trades, if you're trading on a daily basis or weekly, you find yourself in positions sometimes where you just have to do that. You just have to say, you know, the bottom is in. Whatever pullbacks are going to have from here, we're just going to be in it and be long and work with the trade. You can do also, you can wait for pullbacks, but sometimes they don't come. Sometimes the market, as you saw over, you know, yesterday and today, this could be, if you look at your daily chart, it could also be like a monthly chart. A month could do the same thing, where you just have, the market's just running, and you just have to sometimes just be in order to get it. And so, just keep that in mind, that actually is a technique, that's actually a tool, just to get in. I mean, it's not, doesn't sound as clever and may not be as, you know, you don't feel like you're as much a, you know, the smart guy trying to figure out the exact spot to get in and all that, but you're smart because the market sometimes just runs and doesn't give you the opportunity to buy pullbacks until much, much later. and I do mean by that, I really mean much, much later. If you take a look at a monthly gold chart, we put out a report back in 2001 or 2000, we sent to Dwayne, and all of our then existing customers got it about the impending advance that we thought was coming in the gold market. And we made several attempts to get long. And it took 8 years, I mean, think about this, before we could make our entry. The market just ran. And although there were shorter-term places where we could have bought, we just, for whatever reason at that time, we were not comfortable, and it took until 2008, 2009, whatever it was, in the gold market for them to give us the type of entry that we were comfortable with in the size that we were thinking about trading in or intending to trade in. So, yeah, sometimes they just run them, and you just either have to be in or you miss it. And then much, much later, they pull back and they give you an opportunity. And many people, a lot of times, traders are just like, you know, no, I'm not going to go long. I don't want anything to do with it because it's too far down the road. Too much has happened, and they just don't believe in you know, doing that. But we've talked about this before, and there's a lot of times, and as you get better in markets, meaning, you know, you understand a little bit more about more than one spot in the river, you know, you might be able to detect two spots or three spots in the river where you can do something with high probabilities. As you get more into expanding your understanding of these different areas, you'll find that there are places and times to get in the market where it's very appropriate to be long or short way, way into the move. And a lot of people are very uncomfortable doing that because so much of the move apparently has happened. And no trade is a 100% certain deal. But there are high probability trades that exist late, late, late in the move. And later, sometimes it turns out that that wasn't so late in the move. It certainly looked like we were late in the gold move. And now it turns out that, you know, that was 08 and 09 when we got in. We're now in 2012. So now it doesn't look so late. We've almost spent half the time of the market. You know, we're inching in on it anyway, that it had already made up to the 08. That we've been, you know, we've been in the position for about 2.5 years, something like that. And it doesn't look like it was so late now. So you have to realize that it might look late then when you first get in, but it may have quite a bit longer to go. I think luck on our part, you know, there's an element of luck in all of this. But, you know, reliance on luck, reliance on it is gambling. Luck comes to your aid. Just, you know, you're doing your thing, you're working your program the best way you know how, you're monitoring and managing your risk, you're taking profits at reasonable targets, you're re-entering when the market stops you out but then reconfirms, and many of these things we talked about. And luck tends to be in your favor in a lot of cases when you're doing that. But to come into the market and be reliant on luck would be a mistake, because that just means you're essentially gambling. And although gambling does work sometimes, you can take a gamble and get ahead, over time, gambling doesn't work. And that's why they build really big buildings that are air-conditioned with games in it, because it doesn't work for the player, but it works well for the house. And, you know, the player has possibilities, you know, like in the game of blackjack, where the odds are more in his favor. And so, you know, there are periods of time where even in gambling you can do well. But the difference between gambling, at least for me, and investment is that a gamble is when you place a bet when you know that the odds are against you. That's a gamble. Investment is when you place a bet when you, for with all your best information, know that the odds are in your favor. That's the difference between those two. So, you know, do you want to be an investor or do you want to be a gambler? And many people who are quote-unquote investors are really gambling, and that's unfortunate because they haven't really looked at what they're doing. The act of investment is to find something that has a high probability of paying off over a reasonable period of time. That's just one way of defining it. And if you find that, then you act and you participate in that. And you won't be right every time, but over time, you'll be right. Gambling, you might be right the first time, but over time, you will be wrong over time. So that's the difference between those two. That's just as I see it. So let's see. So Dwayne, basis the March contract. Let's go back to that for the S&P. We're basically in a trend day up, and I'd like to see basis March the 69 level get reached and tested. And that would be an interesting spot for us to consider. We may even consider going long before that, but this market is so quiet that it could literally be hours that you're waiting for a very small movement in price. So we'll wait and see how this plays out. Anything you want to add to that, Dwayne?
Well, there was a question in here about...
Okay.
from Jack. Do the weekly trading zones remain the same rolling forward? And if you choose to go ahead and roll forward, they do, Jack. In fact, that topic came up this morning in the live trading room, as it does every time we encounter rollover. And my answer, although it was brief this morning, they said, what should I do about the zones if I've rolled into the new contract? And my answer was, it doesn't matter. And they were like, what do you mean? Well, it doesn't matter, because whether you're in the current contract or you've already rolled forward to the new contract, like right now in the March contract, we are sitting inside of the 1354/55 weekly trading zone. We ran up to 54.55 overnight. We came back to the 57.58 weekly trading zone, and we've now pulled or rallied back up to the 64.65, and we're just sitting inside of that zone right now, trading, as you said, very quietly at 64.25. Now, on the June contract, which I went ahead and brought up a chart of that just to see what it looked like, and we are trading at 1358.50, which puts us right at the 57.58 weekly trading zone. Mm-hmm. So in past discussions, people say, well, how's that possible? And I always say, I don't know. It just is.
And that's a good answer. It just is.
It just is, and so I just go with it. I spent mm-hmm. a lot of time trying to figure out why, and then I said, you know what? I don't need to know why water's wet. It just is. And it tastes good going down if it's clean. So I'm okay with that. I don't have to. Mm-hmm. at some point you go, you know, I've peeled back enough layers of the onion, and it's an onion, so let's just go with that. You either like onions or you don't.
That's right.
So
that's right. No, that's good. That's a fair enough explanation, and I do that all the time in my own work where I just can't – you just can't know everything. You know the best you can, and even my best explanations of what I am using in the market successfully, those best explanations are not necessarily – the real reason why it's working. And not that I'm hiding it, I just, you know, I'm giving you my best explanations for how these things work. And some, you know, in the end, we really don't know necessarily why, but we put our best explanations to it. And with anything that I discuss about our three-dimensional approach and anything else, those are my best explanations to verbalize what I see. And sometimes you're left in a position where, just like Dwayne says, you just say, you know, I just don't know. And it's just fair enough. We don't know, but we know that this is a phenomena that works, something, you know, whatever you're pointing to, and we just go with it, and we trade off that off on that basis. So I agree with you on that. That's sometimes the explanations.
There was a question for you from, let's see, Patrick. If the S&P did reach the high in February, does David think the decline off of this will be more powerful as compared to a new March high being reached with less of a decline anticipated?
I think he's asking, if we broke out to a new high, would that be a less important decline? And if we didn't break out to a new high and got a, you know, had a top indication, would that be a more important decline? in this particular case, okay.
I had no idea what he was asking.
Okay, I think I know what he's asking, and right. I'd like him to correct me if I'm answering, if I didn't get it right. But
yeah, please.
Sometimes you'll hear us say, basically, sometimes you hear us say, listen, if we get up and we make a new high, the top is still here, but it might be a less important top. And sometimes you'll say, listen, if we can't get above this high and then we fail at a certain number, then it's going to be such and such decline. Interestingly, because this is a larger time frame top and we're still inside, not subsequent to, but inside the same time period, which is March, it doesn't make a difference right now if we break out to a new high above the old high, 77.25 basis March. If we make a new high, that will not change the importance of the top. So even if we, as far as we're concerned, this is a general statement. If we don't make a new high above 77.25, get an indication for a top, and sell short, I'll just be as happy to do that as I would be even if we do break out to a new recent high. We're going to short all of those. And any of our the institutional people that are trading in much larger sizes, they're all in on that as well. I mean, we're going to sell short any new daily top we get in the market here, either at or below the old high or above it, because we're inside the larger monthly top, which is, we're not subsequent to it yet, we're still inside it. The story would change possibly if we were subsequent to it, but I'm sorry about my throat, but so I hope that answers this question. They're all going to be important. All the tops are going to be important to sell so that we can, you know, have a good shot at being in for the top here. So I hope that answers it well. And if you want, Dwayne, I can move on to some other markets here, if you so desire.
Sure.
Okay. You're so easygoing. It just makes me sick. All right, let's move on. No. Let's see here. I just going to mention this. You know, if we continue to have this in, okay, this is June again. I'm sorry. I won't keep throwing these back and forth because everyone's going to get confused.
I'm going to go ahead and because someone in the audience has said, would you please put up a June contract? So I will.
Yeah.
I have one up.
Oh, see there? He's got one up.
Right there.
Okay. Then I don't need to.
See, Michael didn't have a problem with that because his name starts with M, and M represents June. Mm-hmm. So he was right on top of that.
Is that plus or minus one consonant? Or?
Well, yes, one plus or minus one vowel.
Oh, okay. Could I buy a vowel, please?
Yeah, go ahead. All right, let's see. So we do have something that's lining up, but I'm going to let's go to the other markets real quick here, and let's take a quick look around. These are just going to be some commentaries about the other markets. There's not a lot for me to throw here. We had the weekly top for the week of February 28th in gold. We're still in a downtrend technically off that. We've had a daily bottom that we had forecast for March 1st. Came one unit early for a bounce, and we forecast that after that bounce they would break to new recent lows. They did that. There was no mystery in that. It's simply that the market a larger cycle is at work and wants to go lower. So they did break to new lows, and now after having done that yesterday, we're having a nice bounce here in gold. We may have something. If they did give this to us, if they gave us a new high off of whatever today's high is going to be in April gold tomorrow, that actually would set up the potential for a roadmap in gold. And we're offering all the roadmaps on Messenger Pro, which you can sign up for a subscription to and get them all. It's been a little bit slow with roadmaps. We've had a few on the S&P, but it hasn't been as active as I would like it to be. But, you know, when we put roadmaps out, we put them out because we have everything in place. And a really good investment doesn't happen necessarily every day or every few days. Sometimes it takes time. You know, Donald Trump, I'm not relating myself to Donald Trump, but any big investor that does very well very carefully selects what he's buying. He doesn't say things like to himself, I made a lot of money on this last good, well-selected investment, and so therefore I'm playing with the house's money, and now I'm going to go over here and do something a little less smart with my money, because even if I lose on it, I'll still break even on the year. But that's how traders think. They'll say, you know, I just made a great trade, and I made some money in this, but now I've got extra money, and therefore I'm going to do something not so well planned, not so well thought out over here. And if it works out, it ends up not working, then, you know, at least I break even on the week. And you know what? 9 times out of 10 when traders say that, guess what happens to them? They break even on the week. I mean, your forecasting just got inverted. You just forecast your own failure. You have to take every one of these and go find the very best investment you can find in order to put a string of winning trades together. Ain't no two gosh darn ways about it. This isn't a game for you to consider. If you do consider the money that you make, the house's money, that means you haven't really accepted the money as earned. Because you sure do act differently when you earn money. You don't talk like that with earned money. You don't go giving it away when you've earned it. But if you didn't earn it and somebody just handed it to you, you'll treat it differently, kind of like our current government handles money that they get in the form of tax receipts, the way they handle money. You handle it like you didn't earn it, and therefore you just do silly things with it. So there's something in that for you to possibly think about for yourself, which is there something blocking you, an idea that's stopping you from accepting the money that you make in the market as earned money? Because you don't treat really earned money the way some of you don't treat earned money the way that you treat trading gains. You treat trading gains as if they were the house's money, which means you don't really think of it as earned money. I've done that in the past as well, so I'm not speaking down to anybody. I sure as hell don't do that anymore and haven't for a long, long time. And so when I put a trade on after having considered all the options and I have my risk control and have everything else in place, if the trade does well, I actually take that money in as earned money. I'm a shopkeeper and I made a sale, however you want to think of it, and I had to have a lot of pieces in place for that to happen. And so I put that money in the bank, and I don't think of it as money that I can fool around with. It's money that I can now reinvest in another well-selected, well-thought-out trade. That's how you put a good series of trades together. You don't counter one well-thought-out trade with a second trade that isn't so well-thought-out just because you now are playing with their money. That is the death bell for traders. I'm playing with the house's money, and so I'll do this stupid thing over here, and if it works out, I'm way ahead, but it never does. As soon as you hear yourself saying, I'm playing with the house's money, so I'm doing this, it'll become the house's money. It goes back to the house, if you think of the market as the house. So try to see if that's true for you, that you're not really considering the money you make in the markets earned. Because I see that in a lot of traders. I've seen it in myself, and it was something that I had to recognize that, you know, I go to a great trouble. So do you. So does Dwayne. So does everybody. We all go to great trouble to set these trades up. First of all, you have to have a room to sit down in. That's for starters. So you'll need a house or an office or something like that. Then you're going to need electricity. Then you're going to need, you know, a bathroom. You're going to need all these other things. Then you're going to need a trading platform. Then you're going to need software, and you're going to have to read a bunch of books. Then you're going to have to go take some courses. Then you're going to have to learn to trade. You know, I could go on and on and on. There's nothing free about this. You definitely are earning your living in the market. Do sometimes people make a big gain and then parlay it into something else? Yes, sometimes that happens, just enough to make you feel good about doing the wrong thing over and over again. The right thing is to do what you did the first time in the first trade, is think it through. Plan it. Stock the trade. Mike Reed, Trade Stalker. He doesn't call it that for nothing. You have to go out there and put a trade together. And once you've earned money from it, then you turn around and you do that again. You don't say, okay, oh, I sure worked hard on that one. Now I'm going to do a whole bunch of really easy trades. You got to do it right each time to put a string of winning trades together. And it's the string of winning trades that will really earn you the kind of money or the kind of points or whatever you want to think of it as a trader over time. I won't belabor that point any, but it is something that I've seen many, many times over the years. You know, Page Trader's been here for 12 years. I talk to a lot of traders, and a lot of people think that way, you know. So I don't. It's one of the bad habits that traders have, and partially it comes from the gambling industry, you know, where you get the house's money and you're ahead and you roll the dice and you take the next big bet and all that stuff. So there's nothing wrong with the next big bet as long as it's just as well thought out as that first one was. That's all. That's the important thing. Okay, so with gold, with regard to gold, this is April gold. If gold were to get up to, you know, the 1712, the 1713 level, into tomorrow, this isn't a forecast for that, but if they did do that, that would be something that would attract my attention. We're sort of one day early in some charts right now, and we could do something either today or tomorrow, and so I'm going to talk about that a little bit tomorrow. so we'll see if that's the case. Anything you want to say on gold, Dwayne, or are you?
John had a question for you. How many days ahead can you identify a reflected wave top? And I don't know, John, if you're referring to a daily top or a weekly.
Well, on the time frames, it's different. It can be different on different time frames, and there's different ways to use a reflected wave. And I think it would be wiser for me in answering that question to say anything that you can know in advance that has accuracy is going to be helpful. Don't fool yourself into thinking that you would need to know 6 months in advance, as an example, when a daily top is going to be, or 3 months, or anything like that, because anything that you can know in advance that has a high probability, no matter how far in advance or close in advance it is, can still be used to great effectiveness. So that's about the best way I'm going to answer that question, because I don't want to go into the nature of how reflected wave works here on the radio program, except to say that it does indeed forecast, in actuality, a future point where that the market will be forecasting a top specifically, or a bottom, just as we did with the March 6th daily bottom in the S&P just recently here, just as we've done for the last month and a half for the monthly chart for the top in March, just as we did for the weekly top in gold, et cetera, the weekly top in the euro that we called recently, and the, all these different things. So, you know, effectively, not that this is the case, but if you knew 5 minutes in advance that something was about to make a top, that's a very important piece of information if you have a high probability that the turn's going to occur. So, you know, I didn't answer your question exactly the way you wanted it, but maybe that'll at least be helpful to you. And that's one of the reasons that reflected wave is teachable for me, is because when you do know something in advance, you can prepare and do something for it. That doesn't take away from very valid systems that do something after the fact, because there's quite a bit of information after the fact as well. But it just so happens that reflected wave works it out in advance and can say a lot about what the future is going to do. And of all the things that I've done on this radio program for the last 6+ years, the forecasting of tops and bottoms is the most, and I've used reflected wave to do that in virtually every case. We do have something called roadmaps, daily, hourly, weekly, monthly roadmaps, but I almost always give those out when they are already confirmed by reflected waves, so that there are two completely separate techniques. I'm very careful about giving out information for people to take trades on, because I want there to be a really high probability of success. And we don't, you know, we can't say that we get it right every time, but in a high percentage of cases, the numbers will run to their targets. And I want people to either be able to trade that or be able to see that there is something going on in the markets beyond the mere guessing at price levels, the mere guessing at tops and bottoms and stuff like that, because I'm not guessing. I certainly am not guessing when we come up with these things. There's something very real, just as real as the table in front of you, that's going on in the markets that can give you an edge, even if it's 5 minutes in advance or several days or weeks or months in advance. You know, we made in October of 2010, we made a call for the second quarter of 2011 to make a top. And so that was, I don't know how many months or quarters in advance that was. But to know in advance, and this is something that Michael, when he was out, mentioned to me, and it's funny because although I had thought of, I've heard this before and I've thought about it, I don't necessarily trade this way. But he said to me, because we were talking about a trade setup, and I said, well, the market is likely going to run up to such and such a number. That's going to be resistance, and we can sell against that because that's a reflected wave top. And he turned to me and he said, if you have a positive expectancy that the market's going to go to that number, you should be long now into it and then go short. And I forget that sometimes. I'm waiting for the number to get hit, and I have a high expectation, often just as high as I do that the turn is going to occur.
Right.
So I thought that was an interesting comment from him. And just that was exactly how he verbalized it. If you have a, he just looked at me, turned to me, swiveled his little chair over, and he said, if you have a positive expectation that the market's going to go up to that number before turning, then you should be long already. You should be long waiting for that. And all I could say to him is, you're right. You know?
And one of the terms for that is fade the trade.
I'm sorry, what was that, Dwayne?
I said one of the terms for that is fade the trade.
Fade it meaning
in other words,
to get
you,
in
other words, you want to go short at some number. So
no, he's saying to go long.
No, I understand.
Into your
trade,
and then go short.
No, I understand. Your thing is like I'm gonna get short at I don't know, where's the ES right now?
Yeah.
I'm gonna get short. My big trade, the one I'm putting out, the one I'm talking about, is I'm going to get short if the market gets up to 64. And
yeah,
you're saying that when it's sitting down here at 58. And so the trade is to be short at 64. We're going to sell 64 on a limit. Well, fading that trade would simply mean buying, as he said, on the way up to that point where you then become a seller. And because I used to, when I first used to watch you put out trades on the Messenger Pro, right after we first met, when you would say that we're going to sell short at a certain price or whatever, if that was 2 or 3 points away, and it looked to me like the market, you know, was going to get to that number, then yeah, I would buy that. One would seem as valuable as the other, so I agree with him on that. And I had talked to you about it in the past, and we've had some discussions regarding that, and you said, well, yeah, but the thing is I'm willing to be short at 1364, for example, but that's based on the fact that it actually gets to 1364.
Right. I had lost my connection to you for a little bit, that I didn't hear everything you said. So
okay.
It's okay.
I don't know which part you missed, but...
I don't either, but it just went away here.
It was all good. Okay, anyway. Go ahead.
Okay. You're supposed to say, go ahead, caller. That's what you used to say.
Go ahead, caller.
Okay. You don't need to say that anymore. Let's see here. So, gold. So, let's see. Let's move on to... let's get past the gold. The T-bond market... you know, I'm seeing lots of ads on TV still about the very low interest rates. So you better grab them while they're still out there, because the T-bond market has put in a very important top. And at the end of March, the current month, we will then be in a position to say that we're, you know, past the one unit late, and the market's at a critical juncture. It may well be below more important recent lows by then, but you can lock interest rates in without doing the deal today. You know, you can go in if it's a house thing and, you know, work out all your options. I'm not a financial advisor, but I do play one on TV. So the bond market, we're looking for lower prices and therefore higher interest rates. I just want to mention, I noticed that Stephen Chu, the guy that's the energy secretary for this administration, gave himself an A-. I like when people grade themselves when the economy is crashing around them, when gas prices are up like double over that time. I don't know if you saw that, Dwayne.
No, I didn't.
Yeah. Just making a comment about that. Something just triggered that in my mind. Nothing's this administration's fault. I just want to make that clear. The economy, that was somebody else's fault, and anything he did subsequent to that didn't help or didn't hurt as far as he's concerned, or it helped and it didn't hurt. Gas prices are up more than double, but he's like a passive observer, just standing and watching these things happening, knowing full well that anything he's done never has any impact on them and has never caused anything bad to happen. That's my fear about this guy, is he never, you know, if you can't be wrong, then you can't have the job. You got to be able to be wrong to have the job. And this guy has not been wrong once. If you can find me a piece of tape where this guy comes clean about anything, where it implies that he was wrong, I'll pay you $1,000. Because it doesn't exist. He hasn't been wrong about anything. And that's not a good trait for leadership. If you did something wrong and it didn't work out, you don't have to just come up and say, I'm wrong. You can say, listen, it didn't work out as well as we hoped. Or you can say, you know, we spent a lot more than we should have, perhaps. And, you know, we're going to work to try to get it better next time. But that's never the case. That's never the case. What always is the case is he's a passive observer watching these things happen around him, and there's never any connection to him or his staff. It's just when the good things happen, boy, they pop up like little, you know, those little things that you have to hit with the, what's that little game in the thing where the thing pops up and you hit it on the head?
You know, gopher or something?
Gopher or something, yeah. He pops up. He's there to pop up. Boy, he's ready for a news conference when things go well. But there's just nothing going on the downside. He just, you know, it's all up and no down. And everybody knows that that's not the case in reality, that the administration's made their more than their fair share of mistakes and stuff. But I just thought it was ironic that this guy, you know, under this guy who's the energy secretary, this is the guy who actually came out and said he wanted gas prices to be at parity with, European gas rates. And this was the president's position as well. But it's not the president's position suddenly now that it's election time, and he all that said that himself. I'd be a fool to want gas prices higher. You know, I'd never get reelected. But in reality, he likes the idea of higher prices. He has said so himself. In reality, he likes the higher. He wants to see electricity skyrocket. Those are his own words, by him forcing regulations onto the coal industry. And you guys know, when we talked about this the other day, that would mean that all of us would have to, all Americans would have to wait around for the next 10 years while all those rates are high for some new industry, you know, to get started, get a foothold, and have that energy, et cetera. Should we start on those things? Yes, we should start on other things, but you can't just shut down whole industries now and have everybody else paying exorbitant high prices while we wait for a new industry to appear. That's why, you know, you just have to scratch your head sometimes and wonder what these people are smoking. Or maybe they should be smoking something. Maybe we should offer them something, Dwayne. Why don't you bring some of that stuff back from those faraway places you travel to so often?
Speaking of gophers.
And send it to the White House.
Speaking of gophers, do you remember Gopher in the early days of the internet, before we had the World Wide Web and websites and all of that?
The name sounds familiar, but what is it? What is it?
It was a protocol that was written for distributing, searching, retrieving documents across the internet, because a lot of people probably don't remember the days when you didn't just open up a browser and like type in www.someplace.com and you went there. You had to, it was certainly a lot more roundabout kind of a story, and you could, in fact, there were very few. There was a limited number of places you could go on the internet. You could go to universities, you know, colleges were some of the first places that opened up access to the public. And Gopher was a client that you would use to say, you know, go over here to this university and retrieve me this document and then bring it back to me. It was also one of the most fascinating things it did for the internet, and which was really a precursor to the World Wide Web. You would be reading a document and using the Gopher client, you're reading this text file, which back in the day, I mean, just that alone was pretty cool. You're reading a file from this college across the country on this 50-pound monitor sitting on your desk, and you're thinking, man, this is so cool. But then all of a sudden, there's a word with a little line under it, and if you – and again – we didn't have mice. We were using keyboard commands. You would, I forget what command it was you would hit to initiate that underlined word, and it would pop up a picture of whatever they were talking about. And people were like falling out of their chairs, like, oh my goodness. You know, that was the first interactive. It's really a fascinating study for those who've been around. For those now that just grew up in the internet age, it means absolutely nothing. But back then, it was taken from the term, like, you know, every office, every company you work for, there's always a gopher. Mm-hmm. You know, the guy who, you know, go for some coffee, go for lunch, go for this, go for that. And so that's why they called it the Gopher Protocol. I was listening to an interview the other day with some guys, and one of them brought it up, and it brought back such memories. I had not thought of Gopher in so many years, and there's still and you can still use it on the internet. I mean, it still works. It's kind of not necessary. It's be like a historian that wanted to use it just because they could. Do you remember, David, and you may not, because I don't know how, at what point you became associated with the internet. But the very one of the first two search engines, way before the days of Mama.com and way before Dogpile and AltaVista,
I wouldn't know it, but there, name it anyway.
There were two search engines. They were very bare bones, Archie and Veronica.
No, don't remember it. That's funny. You got a good memory, too. I wasn't associated. When the internet first came out, I didn't even know what it was. And people would say things like, I'm surfing the internet. And I'm thinking, what the heck are you talking about? You know? it took a long time. And you can see what visionaries the people were back then. They understood what the internet was, and they understood where it could go and all that stuff. And, very much like, in many ways, Steve Jobs was a visionary for where all these different products could go and that people would want these things. We didn't know we would want these things, but he knew that we would want and need these things in our daily life, et cetera. And I remember, I just want to mention this, we'll get back to the markets, but the new James Bond guy, he's English looking, but what's his name? Daniel something, I don't know what his name is, but I remember when the iPhone came out, I was in a movie theater watching, I've always liked James Bond, and I like the older ones better, and I'm sure there's a lot of people that are out in our audience that like James Bond, but because I ran into James Bond when I was about 17 or 18, when Roger Moore was the James Bond, and the first one that I'd ever really taken seriously and seen was The Spy Who Loved Me. And that's a really great James Bond movie if you get a chance to see it, The Spy Who Loved Me. It had the white Lotus Esprit in it, which, dove into the water and became a submarine and all that. And so that really turned me on. I mean, I was just early on in my, love for automobiles and, all of that. So anyway, the guy that is in it now, I can't think of his name, but it might be Daniel something. And the movie wasn't really very good. And in it, he had some high-tech, the typical James Bond high-tech devices. But everybody in the audience had already bought an iPhone. And it struck me, this is one of those peculiar times in modern history where a James Bond movie, by the time it was made, because it takes 4 years sometimes to make these movies, by the time they'd made it, they had no idea about the iPhone. So all the people sitting in the audience had higher-tech devices in their pocket, able to do GPS and all kinds of stuff, than the James Bond did on screen. He brought out this little thing that would tell him where something was. It's like, hey, I can do that, and I can do like five times that with this. I can do banking. I can deposit a check through my phone. And he wasn't able to do that. And I thought, it always struck me, isn't that funny? How often is that going to happen? Right at the edge of the iPhone coming out, this movie was being made. Nobody knew about it. Nobody knew about all these technologies. And then suddenly it comes out, all the apps come out, and all the people in the audience are going, yeah, so what? Guys, you're supposed to have stuff I don't have. So, is this mic on? Anyway, I thought that was a good point.
Great. I was trying to remember what the acronym was for Veronica. I mean, obviously Archie and Veronica are from the Archie comics, but there was
Are we having two different conversations, Dwayne?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Most days.
Most days.
Veronica stood for Very Easy Rodent-Oriented Net-Wide Index to Computer Archives. Just like a gopher, burrow underground and go find whatever it was you told it to find with a very complex, you weren't clickety-clacking some mouse. You were typing in, get / space, name of a file, and the university you're attempting to log into. And it was all, it was just a whole different world when you had to actually type in the commands for a computer to do anything. And then all of a sudden, along came a man named Steve Jobs. And, Bill Gates gets all the glory for creating Windows. But in fact, it was Steve Jobs and the Apple operating system that first gave us a GUI, or a graphical user interface. And then Bill Gates took it and ran with it and, did quite well. And he actually turned out to be a nice guy. Steve, not so much. I finished the book. I thought he would soften up by the end, but right up to the very end, he was still taking everybody to task, calling them jerks, and telling them, why they just didn't measure up. So, whatever. That was his personality. Doesn't take away from the fact that he was an incredible visionary.
Oh, it may not even take away. It may have even been a part of the fact that, he was very hard on himself probably, and also had very, very high standards, and it quite bluntly pissed him off when he sees people. I'm not defending him, but it very well could have angered him, let me use better language, that when he would see people not rise to his standard, or when he would see people whose standard he had to keep pushing up to get it to just be barely acceptable by him, and that sort of thing. And I can tell you also that I've worked with programmers. All of the businesses that I've been in, obviously, have had programmers, and I've worked with a large number of programmers over a large number of years. I employed about 30 of them at one time in the 80s. So I know very well, when we were developing this telephone switching system, I know very well the frustration and the resistance you get when trying to express your idea or vision and how you want it to be, and how it can never be that way because they need it to do it this way, when in fact they just don't want to break out of their box and do something different. And so I'm quite certain that he had a lot of those frustrations along with his own whatever else he brought to, you know, the table. But quite often these visionaries and people like this have very, very high internal standards. Artists are very much like this. Many of the great artists or musicians included end up in self-destruction partially, in some cases entirely, because they just can't stand a piece of work that they put out. I remember one of the things that Steve Jobs said about his iPod, or the first musical thing, the little thing that, you know, you could play, have all kinds of songs on. Is that the iPod or iPad? What is that?
iPod.
iPod. Okay. That once it was released and he had already worked really hard on perfecting it, he said something like, you know, well, you know, now it's out there. Now we can't fix it. You know, in his mind, it just never was good enough. He had very, very high standards, and that makes it very frustrating for him to deal with people who may not have anywhere near that standard. I'm not defending him, because it's not necessary to be rude to people or call them jerks and, you know, all the things that you've read about in the book. But I certainly know from personal experience that you get a lot of resistance from people, and that anybody that comes out with a product that really does something well, that person, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into that, because it's not just having the vision, but it's getting that vision into other people's heads and getting them to do the bloody work and get it done the way you want it, rather than them always countering your idea with one of their ideas. Well, how about we do it this way? You know, sometimes people just counter out of this, the need to counter. You know, they just throw something back at you instead of just simply doing what you ask. So, you know, I can imagine that he's been through a lot of frustration with his own internal standards. You take a look at his products. You know, elegance is, you know, these are the Mercedes-Benz or whatever you want to call it, you know, of the products of the computer world. You know, people, you can buy a laptop computer for $500 now, but people go out and buy en masse, you know, laptop portables that are made from Apple for $1,800 and $2,000. And part of what they get for that is this very, very elegant and very beautifully crafted, even the internals, the way things are wired, if you've ever seen the inside of an Apple, you know, it's a piece of art. That's what he was doing. He was mixing art and science together. It meant a lot to him to do that. And so, you know, I won't go any more on that, but that's basically my take on it. I didn't read the book, though, and so I know you from you saying what you said, it sounds pretty ugly.
I ground through all 25 hours of the audiobook, and you know, no one denies his genius, but almost to a man, his friends, family members, everyone that was interviewed, and he allowed anyone and everyone to be interviewed, although many, you know, have fond thoughts and memories of him, to a man, they all say he was incredibly self-absorbed and mean-spirited. That's, you know, he'll go down as a mean-spirited genius. Very, and that's just, you know, and he was aware of it, and not ashamed of it, and made no, people would tell him, hey, you know, you're kind of being a jerk yourself. And he would go, well, I don't care.
Yeah.
It did not matter to him. What other people thought of him meant nothing until all of a sudden somebody would say something, and then he would go off and cry. And so the people who cared about him would come and try to console him and wipe his tears and say, hey, it's going to be okay. At which point he would then rise up and call them a jerk and tell them how weak they were. And it was like this never-ending thing. He was a very tortured guy inside of his own
mind. Yeah, a lot of people
inside of
who
his
are
own
artistic
mind.
He
really, truly was. And so, you know, it is what it is. We'll all leave our own story, whatever that story is. And each day we are writing that story. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, there you are. Okay, so let's move on to the euro real quick and take a quick look at that. The euro, we had forecast this weekly top that had occurred. It came in on time on the week of February 27th. There was a number of weekly tops around that time. And we do have the possibility, first of all, the date I want everybody to write down is the week of March 26th. We've talked about this yesterday or the day before yesterday. This is going to be a very important period for a sizable volatility cycle that is due in this market, even on a daily basis. But so we want to watch for that coming up, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. That will end up being a roadmap most likely as well. Normally, I would expect to see further bounce from this time period in the euro, and I wouldn't expect to see this week or next close below 131.20. So with that in mind, I like the idea of, you know, potentially long positions going into at least for a week or so here on this. If you get them set up, I don't have an actual one right in front of me, but you know what I'm saying. Look for the long side, and then that'll lead us into if we did get a big advance, that would be a very powerful setup for this week of March 27th. So let's watch and see how that works out on the euro. I don't know if you have anything you want to throw in on that as well. You can see real quick that March 7th yesterday was a bottom in the euro. And, of course, how we've said this so many times, that these turning point dates on the S&P, we look for them to be to be found in other markets as well. So here's a March 7th bottom, one day off that, and the euro is up substantially now, and we'll close the week well, I'm quite certain. And let's see, we'll go on here. Well, silver's up, same thing as gold as we talked. The crude oil market, same thing. Look at March 7th, the daily bottom on March 7th. So they're up. I'm looking for the right word, but whatever it is, it went along with the bottom on the S&P, which was the forecast bottom, but these other markets also helped confirm the fact that they all had their own dates for this time period, plus or minus a day. They're all responding, and that helped us confirm the bottom on the 6th for the S&P. if you want, we can talk a little bit about, next week. Let me take a look at the calendar here. We're going to have something maybe on Tuesday, maybe Monday on next week. So we have something coming up on crude as well that we could trade in the form potentially of a roadmap. Let's see. So just keep that date in mind. That's just a couple days from now. We also talked about, that's the same thing. That's the daily bottom. I think really that's about it for the usual markets that we all talk about, Dwayne. Let me just see if there's... Oh, and then we do have the crude market does... I do want to remind people, the crude market itself also has a monthly top due in March as well. And so the crude and the S&P are both showing the same date for a monthly top. And so that's interesting because the crude oil market, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty. There's certainly anytime you have the possibility of war and, we have the Israeli and the Iran indication there. There's and then, you know, the blocking of the Straits of Hormuz or whatever with the oil cargo and all that.
Saber rattling, I believe it's called.
Saber rattling. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, is it not a real... I mean, does it not frighten people to think that a country like Iran would have a nuclear weapon? And does it not frighten you to think that, you know, they really do have centrifuges and they have way, way more of them than would ever be needed to process plutonium for ordinary power use, for just utilizing it for power, which is what, you know, people, they say they would do. But the more you refine, you have to keep refining plutonium with centrifuge science in order to get it to what you would call weapons grade. And they have all of those centrifuges necessary to do that, way beyond the number that would be necessary for simply refining plutonium for ordinary power development, electricity. So it is a bit scary. I don't know that I would want to be in Israel's position, having a man that says, I want to wipe this country off the face of the earth, and actually see him day by day advancing his machinery to produce a bomb. Well, and then, of course, Israel's when the bomb goes off, they'll say, well, we had nothing to do with that, of course.
No, Israel's made it quite clear that they're not going to sit still and allow that to happen.
Right, and our president wants them to, relax and let democracy take its effect, and on and on and on. That buys more and more time. This president has this was an issue when the president came in the office.
Right.
This whole business was already in play. We're now 3.5 years later, and he still wants the same thing he wanted then. Let's double down on what hasn't worked for a couple thousand years. What's that?
It's been an issue for a couple thousand years.
Yes, it has. It has, but. He basically, doesn't want Israel to do anything. And, that hasn't worked so far. Iran continues to move forward. And, again, the administration wants to double down on whatever it is that doesn't work. That they like. They love to double down on what doesn't work. They don't want to do what might work. And in this particular case, you're right. Netanyahu basically said, look, we're going to do what we have to do. And I think what that means is they're preparing to take out some of that stuff. And so oil, in spite of that, the reason I bring that up is that, the oil chart shows a monthly top that would be due in this time frame. We're not taking any action on that yet, but I do want to say that we'll continue to watch this and maybe put a trade together a little bit later as that continues to confirm. Let's see if there's anything else I want to say. And then we also have, I don't know if Bert is around today, if he has anything.
I think he's on the phone helping someone.
Okay.
What was it yet?
Nothing in soybeans, by the way, the soybeans have been real quiet up here near the high. There have been, some intraday trades and stuff, but we're just giving out the roadmaps for that and waiting for the next one. So go ahead, Dwayne. Oh, by the way, I got to say one other thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just want to throw this in. We talked about Tesla, the electric car company that I happen to kind of like what they're doing. And they have also put in a daily bottom on March 6th. They're going sideways here, and you might want to consider this, but this is against a weekly top. So we have a weekly top that is sold off to a daily bottom. In this particular market in Tesla. But keep an eye on this, because this is a company that I think is going to go somewhere, and the guy that is running it is on fire, and he's not going to fail. He is going to produce a car, and it's going to be a stunning car, and he's got a whole lineup of them coming, and he's put together a really remarkable group of people that...
Isn't Google
really
part of that somehow? Are some of the guys from Google?
I don't think so, but I'm not sure. I do know, though, that along with his own, he picked up the way to see. I mean, if you haven't seen, for those of you that are interested in cars, if you haven't seen the Tesla Model S, it's one of the prettiest car designs you'll ever see. It's a little bit, Jag and Austin Martin-ish and some other things, but a very, very interesting rendition of those cars blended into a really original but somehow familiar look, and very, very nicely done. He's this guy that he's got that did the design on the car, and Mercedes has now invested in them, Toyota has invested in them, and they're doing batteries and other things for those companies. So there's actually business going on in the background with their technology. So keep an eye on that. That could be a stock. We like stocks. We don't talk about stocks on the program a lot, but we really do trade heavily in stocks, in tens of thousands of shares.
Here you go. Here's an article from back in 2009. Google co-founders Larry Page and Sergey Brin are two of the investors pumping money into Tesla Motors.
Yeah, there you go. So they like it. And so there's a lot.
You see two guys like that, 2009, we're going back 3 years ago, they were putting their money into this thing. you know, sometimes you follow the smart money, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I got to believe that whatever those two get involved in, I mean, they're not going to always be right. Steve Jobs wasn't always right, but
No, they're
pretty smart.
They're pretty smart. So anyway, so keep an eye on Tesla. That's T-S-L-A.
The last time I had coffee with them, they were the smart guys in the room.
They were? Okay. Yep. Well, you're pretty smart, Dwayne. You know, I wouldn't discount yourself too much here.
Well, thanks, Dave.
You know.
Big of you, big of you.
You got something going on.
All right, anything else? I got to go to a teacher-parent conference.
Conference. Okay, well, keep an eye on Tesla. That's all. We put in a bottom there on the daily chart, so let's watch that. The S&P is reacting off that 58 target. Again, this is in the June contract. We may sell against this, but it's so slow right now, we're going to wait. You know, sorry about the indications with regard to really putting something together here. There's just the market has done a lot of its big moves on the overnight. It has one move, and then it's very, very quiet for hours and hours, so it's not a lot to do just yet with today's market. Patience in the markets is a very profitable, can be a very profitable attribute if you know what you're looking for and you're patient to wait for it. So let's talk tomorrow. Tomorrow's Friday. We do, by the way, we do have, for anybody who's interested, we do have a webinar today on simply on our Messenger Pro product. For those of you who may be new, haven't seen that before, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the things that it does, how it might help you in your trading. That might be something that's interesting to you. You can come by today at 1:30 Pacific time, 3:30 Chicago time, 4:30 Eastern time. You can go and click on the link in our traders blog section at pagetrader.com. Just click at the right-hand side on traders blog, and that'll take you to the link for today's webinar, and you can take a look at that and see if there's something in there. This is the product that gives out all of the roadmaps that we'll have. And there will be periods where we really have a lot of them. And I'm working on getting more of them. I'm probably going to include stocks in those because even though we don't really talk a lot about stocks, but we trade very heavily in stocks and have been for years. So that's something that I think is, you know, it's another one of the investments out there that you can put some assets, some money to work for you. It's a slower boat, but it still pays off. And if you get enough of those slow boats going, you know, the port starts getting filled up because the boats are coming in. How's that for a little poetry?
Hey, that's good. I sent the link out to everybody in the room.
Oh, thank you, Dwayne. That's very nice. I appreciate that very much.
Guys, and you've got the link there. Just click it and go.
Okay. Well, very good. I will talk with you guys tomorrow. And we'll put it together. Thanks for the time today, Dwayne. Nice being on the program. Look forward to seeing you guys tomorrow.
Okay, David, have yourself a nice afternoon, and we will
see
you
tomorrow.
Thank you, you too.
All of you. Thanks again.
All right, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
I didn't notice what time it was.
Thinking. Oh, that Dwayne, living large, going to parent-teacher conferences. You wish you could go. Well, you can go in my place. Nah, it's really not that bad. I won't exactly say it's exciting, but, you know, it's fun. And I'm sure you've all had your opportunity to go to them as well. Both as a child and as a parent. So, anyway, common decency says I should shave and shower first. So, I'm going to go ahead and get on out of here. Remember, we will roll over into the June contract either tomorrow or Monday, Tuesday at the very latest. We may do it tomorrow. You know what? In the trading room, we'll probably still be in the March contract, but then by the radio program, I'll probably roll it forward just so we don't confuse people with, well, which contract are you talking about? Because by the time we go into the radio program tomorrow, I'll be done, you know, with any trades that I might put on tomorrow. So, for simplicity's sake, when we put up charts tomorrow during the radio broadcast, we will be on the June contract, the letter M. If you're on a continuous contract, by default, your platform has already rolled you over. This here is just, it's really nice. See this? From zone to zone to zone. Now, how much room's in there? 6 points. 6 points down, 6 points back up. Zone to zone, that's 12 points. Now you had to be awake before the markets opened, and you know you had to get in down here. How much time did you have down here? Did you have much time? Let's go look. What did that look like? Let me shrink this chart up. Okay. Here's how it looked on a smaller time frame. This is the 10,000 contract chart, which all of the partners are familiar with. It's a volume-based chart. Okay. Here we are coming out of the zone. We get the bearish cross. We get the pullback. We go sideways a little bit here, right at the open. And then we continue the drop right into the zone. And then once we get to the zone, you get a nice little double bottom here. And then off of that double bottom, get a bullish cross, get a pullback, and we get this move up to the zone. Okay? Where we've now been going sideways for, oh my goodness, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 200, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 300,000 contracts. On a day when we've traded less than 2 million contracts, 1.75 between March and June, I think it is, 300,000 inside of a 1-point range right here. 64, 65. If you go out to, let me drop this to a 10,000 over here. This is the June contract, okay? Look at what we've done right around the 57, 58. But wait a minute, you can't use those zones because that was for the March contract. Well, I guess you can. Or not. It's entirely up to you, but you see what I'm talking about. Why? I don't know. It just is. So, with that, I'll leave you alone. Get out of your hair. What's the market going to do next? That's the problem everybody has, is they think they can predict what's going to happen next, or they can find somebody who can predict what's going to happen next, or they can come up with some new gimmick or gizmo or gadget or thing that will predict what the market's going to do next. That's not possible. No one knows the future. They claim to. Some people have a pretty good idea. Some people have a good track record of calling it right, but you're only as good as your last call. Let's face it, you are. You're only as good as your last call. Now, what does it look like the market's going to do? I'll tell you what it looks like it's going to do. I can't tell you what it is going to do. I can tell you over here that when price got below the red MA1, it looked like the market was going to fall until one thing happened. Forget the zones, forget Super Tuesday, forget anything else. Once price got below the red MA1, it was going to fall until it did what? It got on the back side. Once it got on the back side of the CFMA1, the backbone of the CF indicator set, now what's it going to do? It's going to go up until it gets on the back side. And then what happens right here? Turbulence. It rolled over for 2 hours, and then you got a really strong signal. In 1 hour, this thing popped from 1346 was the low, I believe. The low was 1345 and the high was 5175. Okay. Big candle by comparison. So that made a strong statement. So now what do you think the market's going to do? Well, you think it's going to go higher until it gets on the back side. Now again, right here, you get a little bit of turbulence. You get on the back side. But notice where the MA1 stays. See here, you got it went flat. You got just a splash of red on that one candle. But here, you got on the back side, and look at the slope. This thing is still headed up. Okay? It wouldn't have been until this candle that I would have started to think, maybe this thing's going to roll over. But we closed right back above it. Keep in mind, these were Globex hours right in here. We closed back above it. And now once we've closed back above it, do we know what's going to happen? No. What do we think's going to happen based on what we see? We think price is going to continue higher until it gets on the backside of the MA1. It did. And because it bounced so quickly, it never had a chance to turn. But now look what's happened. We're stalling out. We're in the second hour here. I've still got 27 minutes left in this hour. I don't have a tool that allows me to draw a curved line, do I? Well, we'll see. Last time I tried to use this, it didn't work so good. It's got disappearing ink. You see that? Let's see if it does that on my other monitor. Okay, that time it held. Oh, it only holds as long as I keep the mouse button down. Okay. All right. Fair enough. Okay, so can you change colors? Choose pen color. Ain't that something? Okay, so not the best drawing tool ever. Something like that. Anyway, see what happens here if 64, 65, if they continue to be resistance, it'll roll over, and then we will anticipate lower prices. Right now, you can only anticipate lower prices based on the fact that you're below the MA1, but it hasn't rolled over, it hasn't turned. See how this turn, price pulled right back into it and just slid right down? And then it moved up, turned. Now, this is an hourly chart. Am I suggesting you go get an entry off of this? Nope. Get rid of my drawing tool. There we go. No, the entries are over here. Entry here. Entry here. Entry here. And here. And if you're really gutsy, even there. The problem with that entry is you're at 59 on the entry. The zone's at 58. You've only got one point for it to travel. And so that's probably one that I would, you know, this looks pretty good. Up here, you're at 60. You've got two full points. Now you're at 60 and a half on the pullback. So you've, from here, you've still got 2.5 points to hit the zone. So, now is there anything wrong with a trade where you know that your potential is, you know, just 1 point? No, as long as you trade that accordingly, based on that, and you don't risk more than a point to get the point, absolutely. Go for it and have fun. All right, I said I got to go, and I really do. So, thanks so much for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with his mercy and with His grace. I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this, there is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.
You're listening to Doctrine.